You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show with Robert Lee and Nick Doherty.
Hello and welcome to the first Race to Dubai show of the year as the European Tour begins 2016 with the BMW South African Open hosted by the city of Ekurhuleni, a tournament Andy Sullivan told us was the most precious of his three victories last season.
South African Open, obviously littered with history, and to win that one as my first was just incredible.
We also look beyond the Glendower Golf Club to the next few tournaments of 2016, including the Desert Swing events and the Eurasia Cup.
I've been looking forward ever since they announced the date. You know, future Ryder Cup captain. I hope I can make it a good start to the year, make maybe a little bit of an impression.
And we speak exclusively to the chief executive of the European Tour, Keith Pelly. Happy New Year, everyone. I'm Robert Lee, and I'm joined this time by three-time European Tour winner Nick Doherty. And Nick, congratulations at Dad once again.
Yeah, thank you, Rob. It's been a busy Christmas, not a lot of sleep, but a wonderful one nonetheless. So now our family has gone from three to four.
So European Tour-wise, 2016 looks like it's going to be pretty busy.
It certainly is. It's the big wheel keeps on turning. We go back round to the start. Another exciting season. And of course, this one, even more exciting because it's a Ryder Cup year.
Well, on this week's show, we will preview the first few events on the European Tour in 2016. From this week's BMW South African Open hosted by the city of Ekurhuleni through to the Desert Swing events. But let's start this year by speaking to the top man at the European Tour, Chief Executive Keith Pelly. Keith, happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you, gentlemen. Nice to be back. I went to the freezing cold. I think it's minus 22 in Toronto today, so it's nice to get back to sunny England.
So Keith, you're almost sort of 6 months with your feet under the chair. What's amazed you most about the European Tour in that amount of time?
Oh, I think the thing that probably surprised me the most is the willingness of the players to want to see this tour grow and flourish. They have been terrific, open with their time, open with their suggestions. Over the holidays, I had a couple of emails from prominent players with a plethora of suggestions of what they can do to improve and how they could support it. So undeniably, I've said all along, the recipe for success for us is our players. We'll develop a player's first philosophy, and it's pretty easy to try to grow when you have such great support of such wonderful athletes.
You know, the European Tour players, as you know, Keith, are very ambitious by nature. But how important do you think it is for them to see ambition in their CEO and his team around him?
From my conversations with them, I think it would be monumental. They want the tour to grow, as I said, and they want to be part of it. That just opens up a tremendous amount of interesting dialogue that allows us to be able to develop a plan that both parties agree with. So I think they want to be ambitious. They want a CEO that's ambitious. And it really has been an enjoyable experience working with the players to date.
Well, Keith, you really have been ambitious. We've already seen some big changes already. Most notably, probably the final series coming down from four to three events. How do you see that really impacting the Race to Dubai in this coming year?
Well, I think there's $22 million in prize money available. There'll be obviously $7 million, $7 million, and $8 million. For Nedbank, Turkey, and obviously Dubai. The interesting thing, Nick, and the decision was made, and it wasn't made willy-nilly. We spent a lot of time thinking about it. And whether the final series goes back to four is something that we can discuss down the road. But it really didn't make sense that, for me, that one of the events in the final series was a co-sanctioned event with the PGA Tour. It is our final series, and they need to be unilaterally ours. And then the biggest discussion that we're having right now is around the bonus pool, which is $5 million. And again, we're soliciting a lot of opinions from players on that, on whether they want to actually put that more into the actual prize purse or whether, in fact, they want to keep it the way it is. And we've been having significant dialogue with our members, getting input from them, and we will do so again at our players' meeting in Abu Dhabi.
Before Christmas, Keith, you mentioned slow play. You talked about slow play and ways to address it. Have you got a sort of master plan for that?
Well, we talked to a number of players at all levels in my first few months in charge about slow play. And again, this was the topic that they brought up. We're going to be leaders in dealing with this. There's a number of suggestions on the tables that we're working through. We can't go into detail just now, but we will do so when the time is right. And it is very important that I've had significant dialogue with Martin Slumbers at the RNA, and we're committed to doing this together. So we have some suggestions. It's been interesting when you mentioned it and I brought the topic up in Dubai. Boy, I can tell you that certainly generated a lot of discussions and a lot of input from not only members, but from key stakeholders in the games.
Well, slow play is a problem in the game, obviously, but the game in itself is in really good shape with the world of golf seeing the battles and rivals between McIlroy, Jason Day, Jordan Spieth. What's your sort of take on where golf is at the moment? Obviously, there's a decline in where Tiger Woods is in the United States. Is this a great opportunity for Europe to showcase some of the great up-and-coming talent that we've got coming through?
Well, I think what you mentioned is true. It's a very healthy state right now with the young guns, with Jordan Spieth, Jason Day, Rory McIlroy vying for the number one spot, the return of golf to the Olympics. We had our own golf active participation study we undertook last year that showed participation in the UK in a very healthy state, especially among youngsters. 11 million people in the UK actively involved in golf. 9.7 million adults, 1.3 million kids, but people are participating in different ways. And we're going to extend this study to the continental European countries soon. As far as Tiger Woods goes, what I said at the beginning, I think is critical. There are so many young players that are coming through the ranks now and are so exciting to watch. You know, we have some great young players that are pushing for their Ryder Cup debuts. Englishman Matthew Fitzpatrick, who won the British Masters. Thomas Peters, two wins in 2015. England's Andy Sullivan, a sensational 2015 with three wins. Russell Knox, you know, we're delighted he's a member. Lucas Beauregard, who was tremendously consistent in 2015. So I think the game now has said, yes, Tiger Woods was absolutely gargantuan in the growth of the game for many years. But now with the likes of Jordan, Jason, Rory, and some of the ones that I just mentioned, and from a European perspective, we're very excited about the young talent that we have coming through our system.
How much of a family feel does the European Tour have?
It has a great family feel. And what we need to do is extend that family into the membership, into the players. We're a European Tour in name, but we have 27 different countries we play in four regions of the world. So we're more of a global tour, and we need to actually create that family environment across all our different offices, as well as the members, because at the end of the day, we're a members organization. A family feel, and you want to continue that, but it's a business first.
Part of the business of the European Tour are putting on world-class events. Which are the ones you're looking forward to in 2016, Keith?
Well, I think 2016 is an interesting year. It will be my first Ryder Cup, so I'm really looking forward to that, and I think Darren Clark will be a fantastic captain. He's very organized and meticulous in his preparation. I'm excited about that. The Olympics will be very interesting to see in Rio. And you have your four majors and your four championships. But if I was to look at something that I'm very excited about from our tour outside of the Race to Dubai, I might single out the French Open, which will be an interesting event that will go head-to-head against the Bridgestone. We've had some great support of our players. It's an event we would like to grow over time. And, of course, the Italian Open, which will start to actually grow feverishly, and this will be the first year based on its decision that we made to move the Ryder Cup there in 2022. So the Italians are buzzing with anticipation for this year's event, as well as for 2017 beyond. And it'll get a big jump in the prize purse this year. So I'm excited about those two events, as well as every other event that we have on the tour, but with the Ryder Cup just around the corner in France in 2018, and the Italian Open that really has been re-energized.
Yeah, Le Golf National is going to be incredible in 18, and in 22, Rome is going to be spectacular. It really is. Before we let you go, Keith, what about yourself? Personal golfing targets for yourself this year?
My personal goal would be to play in another Pro-Am with David Howell and not be abused the whole way through.
That's impossible.
Yeah, it really is. It was, I hit a three wood. And he said, you know why you hit it like that? And I went, well, you know, I kind of got behind it. And I kind of, he said, no, you know why you hit it like that. And I said, no. He said, because you're not very good. So it was quite funny. He was a terrific guy to play with, David Howell. So my personal goals, to play a little bit with my son. He was 13, and not get beaten by him.
Well, that's a very fine ambition to have. David Howell, by the way, is known as Deadly Dave because sometimes he just slides one right in there and it gets you just underneath the heart like he did with you.
Oh, he's hilarious. He's so much fun to play with. I've thoroughly enjoyed working with the players. They are the magic of this tour. They have so much personality, so much charisma, and they really want it to succeed. And that makes my job so much easier.
Well, listen, Keith, thank you very much for spending time with us on the Race to Dubai show. We love your enthusiasm. We love your plans. And let's hope that everyone on board the European Tour has a fantastic 2016.
Thanks, Robert. Thanks, Nick.
Best of luck, Keith.
Thanks, guys.
You certainly, Nick, get that positive vibe from Keith all the time, every time you hear him speak.
Yeah, there's something about Keith Pearce. I think he's a doer, isn't he? He's someone who not just talks the talk, but he walks the walk, and he's made some really positive changes. And I love the fact of how he's really using the players. That is our strength. I think that's what separates us from the PGA Tour, is that the players are very proactive, some great characters, great personalities. And as we've seen over the last couple of years, Rob, there's some great players now on the European Tour threatening to challenge the top ranks around the world. So good to see the European Tour moving the right direction and with the right guy at the helm.
So then on to the race to Dubai. We've had three tournaments so far in the 2016 season. Let's start with a quick recap. Charles Schwartzel emerged from his slump to claim his 10th European Tour title at the Alfred Dunhill Championship in South Africa, the fourth time he's won that event. And Charles spoke to us the day after.
I found this win one of the hardest ones. You know, I had a lot of things going on that I was mentally trying to fight. So it just felt like it was a lot harder work than what I've had to do previously. I sure was digging very deep.
Charles Schwartzel, I mean, he's won a major championship. He's been a fantastic player, but he's so good. I almost think he's still underachieving a bit.
To a degree, but you got those African events for Charles Schwartzel. Same with Richard Sterney over the years, Brandon Grace as well. They are benefit weeks. I mean, those guys clean up down in Africa. They're so good down there. Great to see Charles bounce back, though, because last year I interviewed him out in the States and he was really, really down about his putting. The long game still looked really good to me, but the putting has been very, very poor. And as you well know, Rob, it's hard to win tournaments when you can't putt well and you're missing all the opportunities that you're creating. Good to see that he's back on the right form again. He's making some putts and back in the winner's enclosure.
Yeah, let's hope it's a really big springboard for Charles Schwartzel as we head into 2016. On the Australian Tour, the Australian PGA Championship became part of the European Tour. Nathan Holman wrapped that one up. Good to see another Aussie getting into our sort of forward-viewing mirror.
Absolutely. He went to the Q School, didn't manage to get his card, withdrew after in the fourth round of the Q School at Catalunya, but then goes ahead and gets on tour the best way possible, and that's by winning an event. So an incredible stuff and a life-changing win for Nathan.
And it was an Australian double on the same day, because when Holman was winning down in Australia, Mark Leishman was victorious at the lucrative Nedbank Golf Challenge in Sun City.
Oh, man, that's awesome. Haven't won since middle of 2012, so to obviously win here is huge. It's been a while, and yeah, I mean, can't really put it into words at the minute.
Do you know, I'm so pleased for him, Nick, because earlier on in the year, he nearly lost his wife. His wife was seriously ill. It was touch and go. They thought she might not make it. He was withdrawing from tournaments and the Masters, I do believe, he withdrew. And then, you know, wins a big at the end of the year. How life can turn around in 6 months.
Yeah, it certainly gives you some perspective as well. There's certainly things in life far more important than his golf. But the golf, it's not surprising that he's gone ahead and won. Of course, he just missed out the Open Championship there in the playoff. You know, he's a big player. He just hasn't had the wins, like he said, but he has now. And it's a big one for him to win as well. And I think it will prove to be a big one for him going forwards with confidence.
Yeah, nice fellow, Mark Leishman, that's sure. And everyone was pleased to see him win the Nedbank. So three tournaments are gone. Let's have the top 10 so far in the 2016 race to Dubai.
10th place, the Thai player Tongchai Jaidi. In 9th, Korean An Byung-hun. And in 8th, Frenchman Gregory Bourdais. Nathan Holman in 7th place. In tied 5th, Danny Willett and Victor Dubuisson. 4th place, Brandon Grace. 3rd place, another South African, Charles Schwartzel. And then the top 2, Englishman, great to see again. We're going back to the Masters for the first time since 2010. Chris Wood in 2nd. And the top man, no surprise, the big Swede. He's been there very often, Henrik Stenson.
So on to this week's BMW South African Open, hosted by the city of Ekurhuleni. It's quite a long title. And Andy Sullivan won the tournament last season, the first of his three titles on the 2015 race to Dubai.
I can't wait. It'll be my first time as a defending champion, which will be absolutely fantastic. You know, obviously to go back to somewhere where you've won, it will always be a pleasure. And it'd be nice to go back there after a long break as well, you know, and then obviously coming out of the blocks early like I did last year.
How special was it for you to put your name on that old trophy?
Unbelievable, you know. When I got my hands on the trophy and to see the people that have won it, it was just absolutely incredible, you know. To have your name alongside some of the greats in golf is, you know, it's just a dream come true. And to win, obviously to be my first one, it was very special for me.
And thanks to Brad Hell for supplying the questions to Andy Sullivan. I'm not sure, Nick, in the world of golf, there's a guy who enjoys what he's doing more than Andy Sullivan.
No, it's great to see a golfer playing with a smile on his face. It can be a sport that can drag you down occasionally. It's a difficult sport, but Andy makes it look like it's a lot of fun, has a lot of fun doing it, and he's proving why by having these great results. And that win is a big one for me. Obviously went on to win more events after it, proved himself three-time winner last year. But that one shows you how much these important moments are in your career. It was gift-wrapped from Charles Schwartzel. He should have won that, Charles. Came back, got Andy into a playoff, and he went ahead and made a great birdie to win the playoff. And he went on from strength to strength after that.
And, you know, even at the very end, end of the year at the Dubai World Tour Championship, it was toe-to-toe in the final round, him and Rory McIlroy. I mean, he doesn't get any tougher than that.
No, and he's proved himself to be a big player, and I think this year's going to be a big one again. I really wouldn't be surprised if he does cement his spot in that Ryder Cup team of Darren Clarke's, and well, all credit to him. Those first two wins in Africa were big, but then going ahead and winning the Portugal Masters at the end of the year, which is a big event on our tour, that would have really made him feel like he's arrived and he deserves to be right at the top of the game.
Yeah, the event's had some really good winners. Ernie Els, of course, Vijay Singh, Trevor Immelman, Retief Goosen, they're all major winners. And Ernie's the tournament host. How much extra work is that, Nick?
Well, I think the only thing he'd say, though, in his favour is that he's used to being the big name. He carries the burden of being Ernie Els. He's such a decorated golfer, someone that's been a hero to so many other golfers as the respect of his peers. And I think for South African golf, it's a big deal having Ernie host the event. Yes, he'll have to do a bit more, maybe the odd dinner here and there, but he can handle it. And it's been a good career. I think he's at the stage of his career where he's putting a little bit less pressure on himself to perform, and he's got other duties and responsibilities in the game now.
Yeah, sometimes it can be a good thing. It sort of takes your mind off it. The day-to-day duel with the golf course, trying to get around the good score. Glendower Golf Club, you played that?
I haven't, but I do know a little bit about it. Watched the tournament there last year. It's not an easy one. It's 7,500 yards, but of course at altitude, won't play quite as long as that. Tree-lined, quite difficult, really tough closing stretch there as well. The last three holes last year ranked in the top five hardest on the course. So always going to be a dramatic finish, and you really have to drive the ball well around there to play well.
Yeah, driver's golf course. So with that said, who do you look to play well here?
Well, just based on the fact that being an Englishman, wanting to support our guys coming through it, and also someone, a bit of a resurgence in form, Ollie Fisher, I really fancy to play well here, just for a couple of reasons. One, showed some real calibre at the end of the season, looked like he was in danger of losing his card, a really good performance at the British Masters, a couple of other good finishes, helped him keep his card, and also does like playing down in Africa, has had some good results down there, narrowly lost out to Thomas Aitken at East London a couple of years ago. So I just think that this could be an opportunity for him to get his career moving back the direction that I think he first planned it to.
Okay, who else is down there alongside him?
There's some big names still in the field. Obviously, you've got the defending champion, but all the Africans as well. The guys you have to watch out for. Start of the season, they've probably played more golf. We're a bit rusty. We've been off for the off-season. Too many Christmas puddings at home. The Africans, better weather, playing a lot of golf. The likes of your Henny Ottos, Richard Stern, he's playing a bit better again. Retief Hurston down there. Trevor Immelman as well. Be interesting to see him play well. He's a two-time winner, back-to-back winner, I believe, of the SA Open back in the day as well. So some big-name players there, and all the usual suspects from the Sunshine Tour. A lot of the players coming through playing from the European side as well. First start of the year, chance to get a few points on the board. And it really is open season for everyone.
Yeah, I see Deadly Dave, as we mentioned with Keith Pelly. Dave Howell's playing down there. I'm going to counter your Ollie Fisher with the big Belgian. I'm going to go with Nicholas Kolsaert. So I think he had a funny season last year. Some good rounds, didn't have the consistency that he wants, but I've got a feeling for him this year that he's going to get back into the winner's roster.
Well, if he drives it straight, he's going to have a great chance because he hits the ball so far. But I just fear on a golf course like this, if you do get a little bit errant off the tee, it's very difficult to score. So hopefully he has been working on his game through the winter. And if so, he could be a good shout, Rob.
Yeah, it could be. And of course, South Africa plays such a big part of the European Tour, particularly in the early season, because after this event, we go to the Joburg Open, which is a massive tournament with a huge field, Nick.
Yeah, it is. One of those big over 200 people in that field. And again, it's another opportunity for the players who've got their card through the Q School, through the Challenge Tour. Yes, it's co-sanctioned, so you've got a lot of African players in there too, but it's an opportunity to get your season off to a fast start.
Well, two events going on in the same week. One's in Joburg, and Andy Sullivan would have played in Joburg and stayed there for two in a row, but he's part of the side to go and play Asia in the Eurasia Cup, which is a pretty big deal for not only the players on our side who are trying to get potential Ryder Cup practice and team play, but also for the Asian players.
Yeah, it's a wonderful event. It's a great thing to see. It's great practice for Darren Clarke as well. It's the first real good opportunity for him to see what it's like, to get to know some of the players that maybe he doesn't know on a personal level, guys that will be part of his team, but also to be able to plan how it feels to be a captain, the decisions that are made, and also the guys, for some camaraderie to be built. And the big difference being in this tournament, though, I would expect the Europeans to go ahead and have a comfortable win there. We've got such a strong team out in this championship that I'd expect them to go ahead and do it. I think the challenge at Hazeltine at the end of the year could be a little sterner than that, though.
I think it'll be very stiff challenge from the Americans in the autumn, that's for sure. Well, Jeeve Milkersingh will captain the Asians against Darren Clarke's European side in the Eurasia Cup. Ian Poulter and Lee Westwood are his captain's picks. Joining qualifiers, Willett, de Buisson, Fisher, Wood, Sullivan, Fitzpatrick, Lowry, Kjeldsen, Broberg, and Austria's Bernd Wiesberger.
I've been looking forward ever since they announced the date, and I've been in a position where I thought I might creep into the team. I've had maybe not as much experience as other guys on the team, but experienced playing for a European team at the Royal Trophy a couple of years ago, and it was great to be part of a winning team there, and even more so being part of a future Ryder Cup captain. I hope I can make it a good start to the year, make maybe a little bit of an impression, and I try to get there as well prepared as possible.
Definitely a sense from Bernd that it's an event he really wants to play in, that's what you want to hear from your players, isn't it?
Yeah, I think as much as anything, you know, when I played in events in the past, whether it be a Seve Trophy or a Royal Trophy, when you play in those, you feel like the next step after that is to play the Ryder Cup. And yes, okay, there's names, big names that who aren't going to be there, the likes of Rory McIlroy, but all of these players, one of the things that you'd want to be part of is an event like this, because the next step is that Ryder Cup team, and there will definitely be players here who are going to make that side. Matthew Fitzpatrick in the Shane Lowry, great season last year. Søren Kjeldsen playing some wonderful golf. Chris Wood, real resurgence in form. There's a good chance all of those guys could be present or certainly around making that team. And some of the stalwarts, which could impart some wisdom, which will help them through this campaign for that Ryder Cup team, in the likes of Ian Poulter and Lee Westwood being there as well.
It's going to be a fascinating watch, actually. I mean, some of the Asian team are really good players. I mean, Alaban Lahiri had a fantastic season, got his card on the PGA Tour as well. Tong Chai Jaidi, Kiridesh Afibanrat, Shingo Katayama, Ben Ahn's playing. I mean, they've got some really good players.
They do have some really good players. I think Ahn's going to be certainly one of the guys you'd want to avoid drawing if you're on the European side. The team is really strong from Asia, but when you compare that to the European side, I think we certainly have a stronger side.
Now, of course, after Kuala Lumpur and the Joburg event, the European Tour sets off for its Desert Swing, which has become a massive part of the early season events on the European Tour. That's the Abu Dhabi HSBC Golf Championship, the Commercial Bank Qatar Masters in Doha, and of course, it's all wrapped up with the Amiga Dubai Desert Classic. Three great events, three really good courses, Nick, different tests, and you're going to see all three of them.
I am, yeah. Unfortunately, going to be there for Sky working. So, wish I was playing, mind you, because they are three of the events that I've always loved playing on the tour. I'd say it's probably the highlight of my season. I used to love the start of the year when we go down there. The golf courses, as you said, Rob, are spectacular. You've got to play good golf down there to play well. You can see that by the sort of champion that they've all produced. Some really good challenges, great condition golf courses. And I think when you've been at home in the cold for the winter, you can't get a better start than perfect weather. It's always about 75 degrees down there. Beautiful golf courses. And of course, world-class fields. Let's not forget that. Some of the strongest fields we see all year down in the Middle East. And it's one of the times of the year when the European Tour, you'd have to say, has stronger fields than the PGA Tour.
Which of the three golf courses is your favourite?
My favourite personally is Doha.
In Qatar,
yeah. I just think it's a great golf course, the layout. It's a real stern test. Traditionally, they have the rough very thick there, so it's a real emphasis on driving the ball. But mainly, it's my favourite because it's the one I've played best at over the years. It's the one I've had a chance to win on. And they're all great golf courses, though. It's hard to pick fault with any of them. And I think that's what makes it such a great run, is that you know you've got 3 weeks of world-class golf courses.
Would you say of the three venues that Doha has the windiest golf course?
Yeah, it seems to blow harder there than any other. And as you know, down there, though, that you can get a sandstorm comes about really quickly, and that can change the perplexion of any day. When the wind blows on those golf courses, it makes such a difference as well, because all the trouble is off the fairway, and, they always provide worthy champions.
I'll never forget the three shots that Chris Wood hit there to win the drive, the 5-iron, and the 15-footer. Three perfect shots, if ever there was any, to win a tournament.
Yeah, and that gap at the front of that 18th green in Qatar, I mean, that is very small. And I think that's what you want, don't you? Every great golf course has a great finishing hole, which really tests the player. They have to hit world-class shots to win a tournament. Dubai's very much the same, isn't it? The 18th hole there at the Classic is
risk
another,
and reward,
yeah,
isn't it?
Absolutely. Par 5, yeah. If you make a mistake, you can make six or worse, but if you pull it off, you can make an eagle.
In fact, all three golf courses finish with a par 5.
Yeah, very true.
Yeah,
very
just true. Thought about that. So, Nick, give me a couple of names that you fancy might have a very good 2016 or a breakthrough 2016.
Well, just a couple of names, and not guys who are particularly really well established, but certainly Paul Dunne managed to get through the Q School this year and get his card. Now, the reason that jumps out at me is because we saw him very nearly win the Open Championship at the Old Course, St. Andrews, earlier last year. And I think there was so much pressure heaped upon him when he had that opportunity on the Sunday. I had a feeling that something magical was going to happen there and he might go ahead and do it. It didn't happen for him on this occasion. And it didn't really happen for him after that. In the starts that he had following it, he failed to light it up the same. And I think that would have been quite hard to take. And then he has to go through the normal process of going to the Q School, going through the stages, just squeak through second stage. I mean, just squeak through.
Extra time.
Exactly. Again, at no stage throughout the whole of the final qualifying was he 100% safe. Every day day he had to play solid, consistent golf. And I think that showed that he had a lot of heart, a lot of spirit, a lot of guts to get through that. And I think this season, he'll feel comfortable, find his feet. And we've already seen what he's capable of. And I think he could be one of those guys who comes first year on tour and perhaps even nicks a victory.
Well, I'm going to chuck a couple at you. I'm going to chuck Ricardo Gouveia at you, who is Portuguese. He spent time in the college system in America. He won the Challenge Tour. And anytime a player comes along and wins the Challenge Tour, that's a proper test. You play four rounds, week in, week out, the grind, and you come out on top. You got some game. And he won the final event in Oman as well. So I think Gouveia's got a lot of potential and a really good attitude. And I mentioned Nicholas Coulthard. It won't be a breakthrough win for him, but I think it's a restart for him if he can come out this year and win again on the European Tour. And yeah, I can see a big year for him as well. So there's a couple of names to peruse.
One other one to think of, perhaps, Eddie Pepperell, a guy that's shown a lot of calibre, hasn't quite broken through, hasn't had that win, but he had a second place last year. One of those guys in the, it was in a playoff, I believe, in Ireland, wasn't it? Came second in
the
end.
It's coming for him.
Yeah, it's really close. Played with him last year in a tournament. He's got a big golf game, and I think this could be the year for Eddie.
So as we start 2016, who are the top 10 in the world rankings?
10th, 9th and 8th All-Americans in Patrick Reed, 9th Jim Furyk and 8th Dustin Johnson. Then the Englishman, Justin Rose, in seventh place. He's been in the top 10 for a long time
now. Do you mean European Tours, Patrick Reid?
Yeah, European Tours, Patrick Reid.
Right.
I said some wonderful things about our tour too. Good on him.
Yeah,
nice to see.
Yeah.
Sixth place, Ricky Fowler. Fifth, Henrik Stenson. And he's chasing the man in fourth. American again, Bubba Watson. And then a big gap into that top three. They really have distanced themselves from the rest of the pack. And third place, Northern Irishman, Rory McIlroy. Doubtful he'll be there for too much longer. I think he will be climbing back up again. Second, Jason Day. Only has an event divisor of 40 as well. So he hasn't played a huge amount of events. He's in a strong position in the world rankings. And the man at the top, the guy you'd expect to be, absolutely set the world on fire last year. Jordan Spieth, still world number one.
Who, if anybody, Nick, after we sit here in a year's time, will have broken into that top three?
I don't think anyone's going to change in that top three. I really don't, because one thing I do think is going to happen is I don't think Jordan Spieth's going to be able to recreate what happened this year. I think he was so strong with the putter and he holed everything he looked at.
That's a lifetime achievement, what he did in 1 year. I mean, he'd win more majors, yes, but to almost win four?
Yeah, very nearly.
That's once in a lifetime, if ever.
Well, his worst performance was the Open and he missed the playoff by a shot.
That's right.
So it was an incredible performance. But because he did it with the putter, putters do go cold sometimes, even for people who are using them really well. When you've got a massive game tee to green like Jason Day and Rory McIlroy, I think they stand the test of time. The thing about Jason Day is that I think he actually puts really well too. I get the feeling that the big contest this year could be for world number one spot between Jason Day and Rory McIlroy.
It's going to be interesting, that's for sure. And I do agree with you that Rory, I think, will be on an upward curve. And of course, none of us can wait until we get to Augusta in the spring to see if he can make it the career slam at the age of 26, which would be, well, just amazing, really. Quite ridiculous. European Ryder Cup standings.
Let's run you through how it stands at the moment. So taking the European points list first, top four players from that are Rory McIlroy in first place, Victor Dubuisson in second, young Englishman, winner of the British Masters, Matthew Fitzpatrick. What a season he had. He's in third, and the three-time winner last season, Andy Sullivan, in fourth. So two Englishmen in the top four on the European points list there. And then the remaining five from the nine automatic qualifiers as it stands at the moment would be from the world points list. And as we know, Henrik Stenson was right at the top there. Second man in would be Justin Rose, then Chris Wood, another Englishman in the team. And then the last two from that world's points list making the side would be Christopher Broberg, of course, winner of one of the final series events, and Danny Willett. Strange to think he'd be the last man in at the moment, Danny Willett, because of after that season, he's just had very nearly beat Rory McIlroy to win the race to Dubai, and yet he's the last man in on the points.
Yeah, I guess he made a lot of his points before the Ryder Cup points started in September, so he didn't get the benefit of that. But still, a great year for Danny Willett and pretty much ran Rory all the way to the tape. So very fine effort from him, and we'll be looking for more success from Danny as well as we get into 2016. Just one bit of news to go before we go. We can officially announce the European Tour Shot of the Year presented by Emirates. In third place was Miguel Angel Jimenez, record-breaking hole-in-one in the BMW PGA Championship at Wentworth. In second place was Patrick Reed's hole bunker shot to tie the lead at the BMW Masters. I don't know if you saw that, Nick, but it was the most amazing shot from about 105 yards over pretty much 100 yards of bunker, and he holed it.
It's not something you do every day, is it?
No, it wasn't. It was a remarkable shot from Patrick Reed. Great composure and skill to get the ball just the right amount before the sand as well. But the European Tour shot of the year was Shane Lowry's miracle wedge shot on the 72nd hole of the WGC Bridgestone Invitational. Votes were collected via the My European Tour section of europeantour.com, and one voter was chosen at random to win a great prize. And it's congratulations to Fredrik Hansen from Sweden, who receives business class Emirates flights for two to a destination of his choice. To watch all top 10 shots of the year, head to European Tour's Facebook page. Well, that's all for now. Next week, we will review the BMW South African Open hosted by the city of Ekurhuleni and look ahead in more detail to both the Joburg Open and the Eurasia Cup presented by DRB HiCom. Until then, you can stay up to date with all the latest news from the European Tour via Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. But for now, from Nick Doty, a new dad for the second time,
bye-bye.
We'll see you next week. Bye from me, Robert Lee.